here's a almost the simplest possible K by K by K, because it's a 3 by 2 by 2. We're going to be working with a slightly simpler version of this a couple of different times. The primary effect was a practice effect. Is there a practice effect? That was the big question in the literature review, in the meta-analysis, and in this study. The second question is whether that practice effect was different when you were using vision, touch, or bimodal, which is just the two simultaneously. And the next question was whether that practice effect by modality interaction was different for shape stimuli than for texture stimuli. So in this design, we have the three-way. We have three two-ways and three main effects. And then we have a lot of conditional effects. For each two-way, we have the version of that two-way at each value of the third variable. So in addition to the stimulus by modality two-way, we have to worry about the stimulus by modality simple two-way at every kind of practice. In addition to worrying about the two-way interaction of stimulus and practice, we have to worry about the simple two-way of stimulus and practice for every value of modality. When we get to the main effects, we have to worry about whether that main effect is descriptive or misleading by worrying about the corresponding simple effect at every combination of the other two variables. It is tough for a main effect to be descriptive in a three-way, which is frankly what makes them so very valuable. When you've got a three-way design and you've got a descriptive main effect, that main effect had lots of chances to not be descriptive. It's amazing that it's descriptive. Now you've got a simple answer in the face of great potential complexity. And when you can say, for example, if you could, there's always a practice effect, that would really be a statement. If you run this two-condition design, which was the first of the studies, if you run that and say there's a practice effect, all right, but what about other combinations? But if you were all done with this whole big design and you could say, you know what, every time we look, people do better after 10 practices than with one, that's a nice organizational simplification. I don't know what the hell the aggregate of vision, touch, and bimodal is, and I certainly don't know what the aggregate of shape and texture is, especially the way shape and texture was manipulated in these. But I can't say what the aggregate of 1 versus 10 is. I just don't know what the hell that means. But if I can say every time I compare 1 and 10, 10 does better than 1, oof. And this gets at the dual nature of what we see as progress in behavioral science. There's two things that we think of as getting smarter. One, understanding complexities. Three ways are cooler than two ways. But on the flip side, the other thing that shows that we're learning is when we can find general principles, like descriptive main effects, even in a three-way. And that's the two-part nature of getting smarter about behavior. There is a certain tension between embracing complexity, and that's the easiest way to get published as a young scientist. Jack it up a level, do the three ways when nobody else is willing to, control for another variable when nobody else is willing to, run that multivariate design instead of that bivariate design. That's the best way to get attention as a young scientist. But on the flip side, every once in a while, wouldn't it be nice to find some simple statement that we can believe in? And there's always someone who trashes the simple ones. I mean, practice improves performance. Except, of course, for Shaquille O'Neal struggling publicly for years to learn how to throw a three throw. He spent approximately $10 million on coaches over a 3-year period to get better at that and actually lost about 3%. So much for practice improves performance. Here's a representation of that three-way that is sort of complicated to look at. Now, if you're embedded in this literature, that is exactly the right way to show this. When I look at that, the world reveals itself. But if I'm trying to explain this to somebody who's not deeply embedded, I am not going to pick this portrayal. I'm going to pick this one. Because here we can look and we see a nice organizing principle for bimodal. There's no practice effect for everything else there is. From there on in, it's just the amount of practice effect. But I can get this down to two statements. One would be nice, but I'll take two. We get no practice effect for bimodal tasks. We get practice effects for everything else. I can get 13 effects down to two statements. Sometimes it's even easier to represent it in side by side.
Do you think that for outside of sight, where people having are more resistant to three ways, do you think that side by side is more easily followable?
I'll tell you what, it depends on what you're trying to say. If the major statement that you're trying to carry is, when we do and don't get a practice effect, I like this one. This one, however, tells me that with shape, vision does better than touch, even though there's a practice effect for both. And for texture, touch does better than vision, even though there's a practice effect for both. If I care about the two ways and how the two ways differ, I'm going to want to carry that. And it's not just John. That whole generation, that half generation that's older than me, saw so many piece of shit three ways coming out of social psychology, where there was just one cell that took a flyer that caused the three way. But the three ways didn't hold up and they weren't really meaningful, that they are suspect. But what you want to remember is that most of the three ways that were built in that generation were people grabbing three things and whooping them together, not saying, hey, we got this effect, and look, this effect is different under these conditions, and this two way is different under these. They didn't see, it wasn't a three way at the end of a programmatic series of studies. It was like, oh, somebody learned a new statistic and wedged all the shit into it they could and then got these weird results.
Because that's what they assume that we're doing when we try to put this in front of them.
Yes.
But like you said, it's not just John, and it's people of his generation who are the editors of all the good journals right now.
And so that's why sometimes this, and sometimes what you gotta do is include that two-way first. You spend the time and say, okay, here's the two-way.
Now what happens?
Yeah. And remember, this you know, I should probably put these slides in. I didn't think about this. There's two ways to get an interaction. Let's say that we ran treatment versus control. And we ran this for males and females that are all 10 years old. And I get this effect. Okay? Now, there's two different ways that I can get a factorial out of this. I can take this design and recognize that in addition to treatment versus control, I could have, but didn't, separate the data into males and females. And the question is, if I recognize that I've got a source of heterogeneity, do I get anything out of making that part of the analysis? And this is known as a variance partitioning factorial design. We haven't changed the amount of variability we have because we have exactly the same scores. But we're now taking what used to be treatment, effect, and error. We're taking that error and splitting it into gender and interaction and error. Okay? The other thing we could do is that we could build the two-way interaction, which is treatment versus control, and go, in addition to our 10-year-olds, go get some 20-year-olds. Now, we are increasing the variability. This is what we had before, the 10-year-olds. We expect that this will increase the total variability in the design. Now, when we put this together, obviously what we have is a three-way. Treatment versus control for men and women that are 10 and 20. And sometimes by showing this or showing this and then doing this two-way where we put males and females back together and then separate them out, you can just make it more palatable. Right? Yeah, those slides are in the 941 stuff, but they really do belong here because there's a difference between a variance partitioning factorial design, which is essentially statistical control. Right? Most of statistical control is trying to pull stuff out of the error term and make it something identifiable.
Well, because there's nothing theoretically different here than controlling for age and gender.
Yes.
That's exactly.
That's right.
You would do in a regression.
Yep. But here you would automatically carry the interactions instead of only carry them if you're thinking of moderated regression. Yep. And this, by the way, is all the cool stuff that you'll see in the hierarchical linear models, the generalized models with Lisa. That's just, it's a whole list of other variances that we can extract out using maximum likelihood methods that we can't do a very good job of extracting out using ordinary least squares methods. And it's all about partitioning. Increasing the focus of the effect term and making the error term as small as possible. Everything is about those two. The original factorial designs were not about the interaction. They were about reducing the error term. The original ANCOVAs were not about controlling for a covariate. They were about reducing the error term. Because the original application of ANCOVA designs, like the original application of factorial designs, was experimental. There was nothing to control for. We had randomly assigned. We're trying to reduce error term. Focus effects, reduce error. That's the reason for all the linear models. Great question. All right, so